So, in discussing Varnashram, then we need to know or understand what is the importance. Can you hear in the back? Yeah. You can hear? Yeah. Okay, why, what is so important about Varnashram? I mean, why even have a discussion in the first place? See, basically, when we want to discuss Varnashram, we means we're discussing a lifestyle, a set of values, the way that we do things. Right? So that is essential for human life. We even see, even in the animal life, they have a culture. Right? An animal is known by the culture they follow. Right? You know, you think of a cat, you think of something that chases mice, climbs up trees, it purrs when you pet it, you know, sheds hair all over the house. You think of that as a cat. Now, if you had a cat that ate fruit, didn't eat mice, wouldn't climb trees, liked to go swimming in the water, you know, would hang upside down at night when it slept, you'd think, you know, what is this? Right? Because it doesn't follow the culture of that particular animal. So generally we think of it as the body, but more is with the activities that they do. So the activities is what distinguishes a living entity. So therefore the human being is distinguished by the activities. So as you've heard, the first or the most important aspect or the beginning of human life is to inquire. Atato Brahma Jigyasa means that when we inquire about the Supreme, we inquire. You can come in, sit down. Looking, just sitting there in the back. You're inquiring about the Supreme Lord. If we need more space, maybe we should all move up a little. Huh. Means there's a problem sitting where you are? No, where are you? Who you're translating for?
No, I'm not translating. I'm just listening to the translation.
Oh, okay. Those who are translating, otherwise you sit up on that upper part up there and everybody else can sit in the front. Might make it easier. You know? Means those who know English come down here, and those who need the translation sit on that raised platform. Okay. Okay. Huh? Okay. So then, yeah, so human life begins from inquiring. When we inquire, this starts human life. Otherwise, before, it's not human life. This is the difficulty. So human life means there must be a culture of humans, right? There must be a culture. So when Prabhupada talks about humans, he's talking about the those who are humans, means the Aryans, those who follow Varnashram. Then those who are outside that, he says, are lower. Like you have those who are following Varnashram. Then after that, then you have the, you know, the Hunnas and the Palindas and the Kiratas and the Andras and all that. And he says, even lower. Right? Because you'll find most of those are in Asia and they kind of follow the Asian culture. So there's some little bit of connection to the Vedic. So even lower means you get outside that, means there's no tinge of it. There's nothing. Like this. So a culture is seen by what they do, what they value, how they relate with each other. Just like you have one country to another. How they greet each other, how they deal, how they eat, how they dress. You know who someone is by what by these things. Oh, someone's from America, they do like this. Someone's from England, like that. Someone's from Russia, like this. You can tell so much by how they act, how they talk, how they deal. So we see that for the living entity, he cannot function without culture. Unless there's culture, he cannot function. How do you relate to someone else? How do you interact with someone else? Unless you have a way to do that. There must be a set standard norm. You meet somebody, you shake hands, or you say hi, or you know when you go away, you say bye-bye, or see you later, or something you have to do. Otherwise, you cannot. How do you function? How do you know that it's time that you're going and left, and maybe I should have said, didn't say, like that. So the point is the living entity will have culture. Now it's just a matter of whether we take Krishna's culture or we make up our own. That is the essential point. The essential point is whose culture we take, like that. So Krishna has given the culture in the form of the Varnashram. Srila Prabhupada says, if you have religiosity we must also understand to mean that set of duties that are a, you know, social interaction in which everybody is, you know, situated in their proper place. You know, like the parents have their duties, children have their duties, a manager has theirs, teachers theirs. Everyone has their duties. This makes up the whole society. So when you have duties and you do them for Krishna, then this is the proper activity. So these duties being done, they must be done in light of serving the Lord. I just noticed we seem to have skipped a point. So religiosity means that set of duties. That's what we were discussing. So Prabhupada mentions that if you have religiosity without philosophy, that's called sentiment. And if you have philosophy without religion, that is mental speculation. So that means the Vedic culture, why it's so perfect, it is not sentimentality, nor is it speculation. Because you have the philosophy of God consciousness, and then you have the Varnashram system, which is the natural culture and lifestyle and activities of those who follow that philosophy. So the philosophy and the religion are very tightly connected. And because of that, then it works very nicely, there's satisfaction. So this is important to understand this point. Because otherwise, if we just say, oh, we don't need all this Varnashram, means then we either live with no culture, which is impossible, or we make our own up, which is called mental speculation. That is the point. So our choice is two. We accept Krishna's culture, or we make up our own. Or if we don't want to take that much trouble, we just accept the culture that our parents did, or, you know, that we developed as we like before becoming a devotee, or, you know, how we pick and choose as we like from what we see around us. Of course, we purify it, we take out all the sinful activities, leave the pious ones, and that's nice, right? Because piety is good, isn't it? Right? The gopis that didn't get to go to the rasa dance, they couldn't go because they still had pious activities left in their heart. So that had to be burned off. You know, so it's good, yes. You make up your own system. It's pious. I don't steal, I don't lie. You know, I do my work, I'm a good person. Like that, you know, I'm moral, I'm pious. But the problem is if that's the end of it, then again we will be here, next life, being pious. But the whole idea is we want to finish the material existence and go back to Godhead. That means we cannot be being sinful or pious. We must be Krishna conscious. So we must accept that lifestyle which allows us to, in the best way, be Krishna conscious. So, looking at this and understanding this, then Krishna, he's not going to leave us, right? It's not that God created the universe and then walked away, right? This is one philosophy. Or another one is he created it, and now he can do nothing about it. It's out of his hand, right? But Krishna is very involved. He expands as all the elements. He enters every atom. He's between every atom. Why? Because he cares for us. The only reason Krishna has created this material world for the, the rebellious living entities is because of his affection for us. He likes us. He has affection for us. We have forgotten him. But that doesn't mean that he is not wanting to help us for our betterment. So therefore he expands this material world so we have a place to perform activities. We want to enjoy, right? The living entity is Sat Chit Ananda. So we're looking for a place where we can internally be happy, right? And we're interested in some variety of understanding. We don't like when we don't understand something. Like you go into a dark alley. You don't understand what's going on. You're afraid. Right? You're afraid. Why? Because you don't know. So when there's no knowledge, one's afraid. Right? So we want knowledge. We want a situation to last. And we want to be happy. No one wants to be unhappy. So the living entity, that's the whole purpose in coming. Is that we were not happy in the spiritual platform because Krishna is the enjoyer and we are the enjoyed. Huh? You can come in. So to come to get to the aspect where we are the enjoyer, you can't do that in the spiritual world because no one there is going to allow it. Right? Just like we won't allow in the temple if some very gross sense gratifier comes in and starts setting up shop there. You know? And just does whatever they like, how they like, when they like, where they like. No one will like. They say, it's nice, you want to do all these activities, there's plenty of space out there, it's a big world. You know? You kindly do whatever you like, how you like. So then, if that is the mood, then one is not welcome here. I mean, there. So therefore, Krishna has arranged a place here which we can come and we can do so many things. And Krishna has seen the nature of the living entity. He knows. So he's then established the three modes, right? And these three modes, then you multiply by three, you get 9. 9 times 9 is 81. 81 times 81, you keep going until you get 8,400,000. So Krishna has given us a pretty good variety of the modes of nature. So he's established this, he's made all this, he's entered into everything. In Gita, Krishna explains how he's entered, to give some little interest, because we are Sat Chit Ananda. So this material world is not very interesting, right? It's dead matter. Can't talk with it, can't relate with it. So there's nothing interesting in it. Right? We're eternal, it's temporary. We are full of knowledge, it's full of ignorance. We are full of happiness, it's just dead. So then what happens is Krishna has to enter it himself to give some interest. Right? Krishna says he enters it as, let's say, so many ways he enters. Like adventure. Right? So many people like adventure. They like to do so many things, climb mountains, go do this, do that, do crazy things. So riding around in a boat, climbing up a mountain or something like that, it in itself has no interest. Just a bunch of rocks, a bunch of water. But Krishna makes it interesting because he enters it. So people see Krishna's entered it, but they don't understand that it's Krishna. What they just see the dead matter. They just see the mountain. Oh yes, I climbed Everest. It was such a nice experience. So they just see the rocks and the snow there. They don't actually understand that the interest that they got was Krishna entering it. Right? Because you do this for a while, after a while you may lose interest in climbing mountains. Then you go to the mountain, there's no interest. So that lack of interest is because you don't see Krishna there anymore. Right? Now you just see rocks and ice and it's cold and it's windy and there's no air. And then because of that, then you're not satisfied. So then you go looking somewhere else. Go do another sport. Now we'll take up water skiing or something. And then you see Krishna in that. So they just go on and on and on like this. So Krishna has arranged it. So now he's arranged it because we must be active. We must look for happiness. Right? We must search for knowledge. But we don't want it in relationship to him. Right? We want it in relationship to ourselves. We are the enjoyer. Right? So, therefore, he arranges it so it looks like we are doing everything. But factually, Krishna is doing everything. We're not doing anything. Right? Means that it's exciting as Krishna. Krishna says he's the taste in water. When you're very thirsty and you drink water and it tastes so nice, as Krishna. We didn't do anything. It's not that we created that taste. We have a tongue. We didn't create the water. We didn't create the taste in the water. Even the tongue, we've created from the mind. Right? We have a subtle body with desires that creates the gross body. The mind is created from what the mind wants is created from our ego, how we identify ourselves. Our ego is created that we have forgotten Krishna. Right? So it all starts back in that platform. So this is So Krishna, therefore, to give us an activity, give us something to do, gives us the material world. Now, the purpose of this material world, then, is with time, we will perform all these 8,400,000 different varieties of activities, and after a while, we're going to get tired of it. And after getting tired of it, then we're going to ask, well, what is the real substance? What is the real activity? Then, if we're sincere, then he puts us in contact with the bona fide spiritual master. Then we come in contact with Krishna consciousness. Then, in contact with Krishna consciousness, then we know who we are. We start to perform activities that are in relationship to Krishna. And these activities, the benefits are eternal. So now, what it means is that activity is going to go on, because that's our nature. But now, instead of just doing any old nonsense, now we start to do activities that are in relationship to Krishna. So therefore, when we eat, that's in connected with Krishna. We cook, we offer to Krishna, we have standards that we follow, keeping everything very clean, very pure. Then we end up with something very, very nice. Then how we eat, we don't just go in and start eating with two hands or roll around in it or like kids do, pick it up and put it on the side of our face. Or, you know, there's a way to do it. We eat with our right hand. We pick things up. We put it in our mouth. We chew them. At least we should chew them. You know, like that. We do different things. So in this way, then Krishna is mentioned to Uddhava in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, that he has given rules and regulations for every aspect of human life. That way the human being does not have to have any worry what to do. You know, in every situation, what is your behavior? What is what you should be doing? What is your values, your activities, everything? And by knowing that, then everything becomes very, very nice. right? It's easy. Just like if you know what to, like if we take you suddenly put you in a situation you know nothing about, you feel bewildered. You know, what am I supposed to do? Oh, suddenly, hey, we want you to come up. We're having this big program. We want you to speak on the stage. Well, what's it about? What is it? You want to know something, right? Immediately you want to know. Well, you know, what's the audience? Who's my dressing? What's the program? What am I supposed to do? Where do I stand? Where do I sit? When should I stand? Who will I talk? You want to know all these things. Otherwise, just say, no, you just, whatever, you know, just you go up there. It'll happen. You'll be afraid. You'll be thinking, well, what if it goes wrong? What if I get embarrassed? So the whole idea, Krishna, to save us from all that, out of his kindness, has given all the different rules and regulations so that we know what to do at every time, every place, every circumstance. So that's the purpose of all these rules and regulations, so we know what to do. But now, all those rules and regulations are in connection with him. This is the wonderfulness of it. They all have some connection to him. Well, if we make up our own rules and regulations, our own culture, we may make them up not in relationship to him. Right? Like you look, you can follow American culture very nicely and never think of Krishna. Right? You can, you know, follow the European culture, never think of Krishna, or the Asian culture, or the African culture, and never think of Krishna. Right? So they've devised very nice cultures, very detailed, some of them, you know, especially like in Europe, just you follow very proper cultures, how to eat. You have so many knives, forks, spoons, plates, bowls, and meal, you know, courses and all that. Very complicated. I mean, it's not easy to learn, not easy to follow, not easy to perform. So much paraphernalia you need. But during that whole time, it's so organized, you never think of Krishna. Right? You can sit down there, very nice, you go through your whole meal and be satisfied not thinking of Krishna. Right? But in the Vedic culture, they've made it in a different way. The whole thing is made so that you always think of Krishna. That is the purpose. So every activity is made so that we think of Krishna. That is the purpose. So now, if we look at the Vedic culture... it's a little bit more. If they need more room back there, more devotees come, you can move all those instruments, put them in another corner or something. There, yeah, or just move them on the other side. Maybe we can just, because this is like the essence of like the purely philosophical aspects of it. Maybe if there's any questions on this before we get down into, means we'll just slowly come down more and more into practical. But the idea is we should have a very good foundation, because as I said, if we approach Varnashram without philosophy, it'll be sentimentality. It'll be simply, okay, well, how do I get my money? Who has the money? Who's in control? That will be the conversation. And so that's just sentiment. I want something. How do I get it? You know? Do I get it from you? Are you helping me or you're in my way? Or we can sit down with just philosophy and never get practical. So the whole idea is that with the based in knowledge, Krishna tells Arjuna, armed with knowledge, you fight. So we should understand the system. Then when we come into it, the practical things are quite easy. Okay. Yes? Go ahead.
I'm not sure if I follow exactly what you said, but at the beginning you mentioned that Varnashram is more based on behaviors rather than in values.
No. I said behaviors and values.
All right.
Behaviors and values. Because your behavior depends on your value.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Ultimately, the value is that the whole culture is based on the member
Krishna. Yes. Yeah. No, depending upon your value, therefore you have a culture.
Yeah.
Like if your culture is freedom, therefore you're going to behave in a certain way, dress in a certain way.
I want to make it
Yeah. No. The whole thing is that's another thing. In educating, you have three platforms. You hear knowledge. You hear something. Then you contemplate it, get an understanding of it. Then the next thing is you have to realize it. So realization means that there is value. Because if you don't, realization means you value it. You understand what it's for. Otherwise, it's not realization. You may have some good breakthroughs and understandings, but realization means the values change. Like that. So the Vedic culture meant the whole idea was to train everyone in the culture so that they came to that platform of values. So it was a value-based culture. That was the point.
You said that suppose we go to mountains and we see Krishna in it, that's the interest. After some time, we just see rocks and ice because we lose that interest. You also said that we go through the various species of life and then we lose interest in it and start inquiring. So what is the factor which makes us lose interest for the mountains or for the various species of life?
Oh, why do we lose interest in the material?
Because if we are so absorbed into water skiing, for instance, all of a sudden, why do we just find it just plain water?
Means we lose interest in the material nature because for such a long time, we've been trying to get something out of it, we get nothing. I mean, ultimately, the living entity is practical. He is a practical person. That at some point, he's got to admit that I'm getting nothing out of this. Of course, the point is the mind is very strong, so we absorb ourselves very much. Because somewhat we've heard, Prahlad Maharaj describes the material world as heard of satisfaction, shruti sukhat. Means heard of happiness, shruti, we hear it, shukat, that someone is happy. We've heard of happiness. Yes, oh, I went skiing, it was so nice, yeah, like this. We've heard of that, but when we go there, we find it's not that nice. Right? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur tells it. So, we've heard of this knowledge, this satisfaction, but actually we haven't experienced it. Because the problem comes is the senses. The senses, see, we actually get some happiness out of something when we are at the present moment. We only actually enjoy something that we experience right now. Those moments that we were right there, those are the ones we remember. And anything else is in the past or the future. You understand? So what's happening is we're doing something, and then we get a great happiness out of that. Suddenly it catches our full attention. We forget about everything in the past. We forget about all our ideas of the future, and we're just there for that moment. That is so powerful for the living entity that he remembers that. And then he'll say, yes, it was such great fun. Means that moment is gone. Because it's only a moment. That's why it says, there's only moments. Because only that moment you remember. Everything else you forget. It doesn't mean anything. Because it was past or future. Right? So that moment was so powerful because you experienced the present. While those ones that you don't remember, you know, it's like you're sitting there waiting, and when's it going to happen? You're waiting for it to happen. You know, or it came to some kind of thing, it happened, and now it's kind of like going away. You know, you had a big gathering, and everybody, it was nice and very enlivening, and then now people are going away and everything, and, you know, it's over. You think, yeah, it was nice then. So it's only at the present that the living entity thinks this is very nice. So we see that depending upon the living entity, it takes various things to get them to be that moment in the present. You know? Some crazy situation, some crazy, movie or something that just suddenly just shocks you and does something, you're there for that moment. And so if a movie can give you a moment where you're there, you'll say, wow, it was a great movie. Or an activity, if you get a moment where you were just right there, then you think, yes, that was very nice. And if you don't get any of those moments, it doesn't, not so good. You know? And then you're thinking about moments that will come, or you're thinking about moments that you've had. So the material world means you're always hankering, lamenting. Hankering for something in the future, and lamenting for that which is in the past. So that is why there's no satisfaction, because how many times is climbing up that mountain is going to give you that moment? After a while it becomes very normal, and it doesn't give you that anymore. You know, that's the thing. So nothing material can give you that, because it's Krishna inside anyway. But you don't see Krishna, that's the thing. It's Krishna's giving that interest, but you don't see Krishna, you see the material nature. So because of that material nature, then we're not satisfied. Because we are different, we are eternal, we're Satchitananda, and the material nature is not. So therefore, dissatisfaction is there.
We see many people like die-hard golfers, die-hard businessmen. They just spend all their life. Some mountaineers want to die in the mountains. Like they spend all their life and they still keep loving it. There's no sense of detachment. So it's the same process of hankering and lamentation which keeps them going on.
That's there. They're still getting something out of it. They're very determined. But the problem is they may continue. What's the big deal of one life? See, we take one life as so important because of the modern culture. Vedic idea was you didn't deal just with one life. You saw your life in connection with everything you've done before and everything that's coming in the future. So past lives and future lives. So you knew reactions that you're getting are from past lives, and whatever you do this life is going to create the next. So they saw a very broad spectrum. So then one life spent golfing, big deal. You can spend, you know, many. But at one point you're going to get bored of it. Because there's plenty of people who are getting bored of it. And plenty of people who are just taking it up as something new. So that's it. It says, chewing the chewed. Someone else already did it, said this is great. You take it up, you chew it for a while, then you spit it out, and someone else goes, oh, look at this, great. And they start chewing on it. So that's the material platform. Is that? Yes.
You mentioned about sadness and pieces of life, and I really have two questions. And first, is there
can you speak louder?
Is there any scripture which describes how three gunas and 400 and 8 million and 400,000 species of life correlates with each other? Is there any scripture?
In detail. Yeah, it means there's scripture. He's asking, is there any scripture that relates about the 8,400,000 species and the particular combination of the modes that's there? There are manuscripts that have it, but ultimately, what benefit will you get? Right. Basic principle is anything lower than the human species. Right, it means the 800 million you get because there's a predominance of ignorance. The earthly human species you get because there's a predominance of passion. And the upper human species you get because there's a predominance of goodness. Right? So the main thing is, as we understand, is when goodness is prominent, the results are better. So if we increase the influence of the mode of goodness, then we get a better result. So the Vedic culture is geared how to create the mode of goodness in the living entity. And then from mode of goodness, you get to pure goodness. So we can understand that. So Bhagavatam gives us that much. Because that's all you need to know to get into it. But there are scriptures that tell, okay, you have this dog, and then you increase this mode, then the ears will get longer. You increase this mode, the nose will get longer. There are ones like that, but what does it matter? What does it matter if, okay, an Afghan dog is, so many million parts of goodness, so many million parts of passion, ignorance, and then you change, instead of 3 million, 859,000, it's 58,000, and then instead of an Afghan, you get a Chihuahua. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that important. What's important to understand is the influence of the mode. That's why Krishna talks about it, but in relationship to the humans. The whole, 17th 18th chapter is just talking about different activities according to the modes. So you know, like if you do something out of duty, you're supposed to do it. Like you're a brahmachari, you're supposed to do service. That's in the mode of goodness. Mode of passion is you want some result from it. You know, why I should do it, what am I going to get out of it? Right? The mode of ignorance is you don't know what to do, what not to do. Things you should do, you don't do, and things that you shouldn't do is what you do. So it gives, Krishna gives that for the 400,000 species. The modes, how they work, and how you can detail what kind of human you get. So that's more important for us than how the modes work on the animals.
So there is one group of, one combination we can change, and one combination is unchangeable. Is it right?
Means the animals, it will always be unchangeable, because that they're set. They had that desire, they got that material body, they get that result. You understand? But for the human, he has, on this platform, he has the ability to act in any of the cultures of 8,400,000. So you can set yourself up for any life. You can act, follow the culture of a blade of grass and become one. You know, or a bug and become one. Like that. But in this life, it is variety. Therefore, Krishna gives so many ways what to watch out for so that you keep yourself in the mode of goodness so that you don't get a bad result.
Also, you mentioned about the Aryanas. And is it proper to think that Aryanas and non-Aryanas, it differs?
No, I didn't. I specifically avoided the word. I mentioned about Aryans, but I didn't use the word Aryan. Aryan means one who has asked that question, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. That is an Aryan.
It's spiritual group.
It means a group of persons who are interested in perfecting their human life by spiritual understanding and activities. But that's an Aryan. It's not who's, you know, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, and came from North Europe.
But I heard, I read in one purport of Srila Prabhupada, he said that Aryanas is a group of men, and it was...
Means in the Vedic culture it was a group. It means Aryans like to come together. Birds of a feather flock together. So those who are interested in spiritual life, they come together. Those who are interested not in spiritual life, they come together. Right? You find it. You have clubs, you have everything is there. People get together according to their interests, you know, interest groups. You want to ride bicycles, there's a bicycle club. People are into it. They have magazines on that. You read, that's your whole world. Someone else has something else that they're into. You know, some hobby or some, you know, cars or this. And then the whole thing goes around. They all flock together. So the Aryans also flock together. So generally, those who are the most serious about the Aryan culture, means about the spiritual culture, lived here in this part, Bharatakanda of Bharatavarsha. In this area, you know. In the whole, like, what you know, this whole, like, the North India.
My final question, Aryanas means a combination of gunas or not?
Everything is a combination of gunas. Means an Aryan, are they a combination of gunas? It means everything is a combination of gunas. But Aryan means one who is interested how to get rid of the influence of the gunas. Do you understand that? See, the difficulty comes in this. Sat, Chit, Ananda. Right? These are what you're made out of. That has been transformed into ignorance, knowledge, and goodness. You understand? Ignorance, passion, and goodness. Right? So those three modes, those three qualities, those three internal potencies transform into this. This will come a bit in tomorrow's discussion. But the point is the spiritual realm has reflected here. It has transformed here. Right? So that means your eternal aspect will carry the aspect of ignorance. you know, your samvit, your knowledge potency will carry the thing of passion, and the hladini will carry the thing of goodness. Or, excuse me, no, hladini will be passion, and what do you call it? I think the sundini will be goodness. So like this, they transform through. Understand? So the problem with trying to see everything ultimately through the modes is it won't work, because at one point you have to cross into the spiritual nature. Therefore, they say you must come to pure goodness. But the closest place to pure goodness is goodness. From that platform, it's very easy to cross. But otherwise, the mode of goodness itself is not that glorious. Right? Means birds that are more interested in vegetarian, you know, cuisine would be considered more influenced by goodness than those who are not. Right? But Prabhupada said, oh, just because someone's a vegetarian, big deal. Pigeons are also vegetarian. Right? You understand? So, therefore, ultimately, these things, the culture without philosophy has no meaning. That's why if you just take the culture and without the philosophy, it's sentiment. Right? So you have to see the culture in connection with this aspect of the culture. How does that connect to the philosophy? What is the important element? Right? Give an example. Why should the child listen to the parents? Right? That's a natural thing of culture. Right? If the child doesn't see the mother as the first authority, right? The child grows up, basically first it sees the mother. Mother is the first authority. Then if it doesn't accept that, it can't move to the second stage, which is, as it grows a little more, it'll naturally see the father as the next authority, because he sees the mother is submissive to the father, right? He sees mother's authority, all nourishment, all my care, everything. So there's my shelter. But I see that mother is taking shelter of the father. Listens to the father. The father is the authority in my total world of the house. Right? And he sees that the mother works very nicely with the father. There's a very natural... So it goes from him to the mother to the father. Very nice... whole, like, very nice relation. He never sees the mother fight with the father. So then he sees it, yes, this is a very nice thing. Now, what will he see with time? Right? So we can say, yes, this is a moral thing. You should, you know, children should be taught to be, you know, listen to their parents and everything like that. That's the moral platform. That's the platform of religiosity. Now, if you leave it at that, it's just sentiment. Because what does it matter? This gross body, that gross body. This ignorant living entity, that ignorant living entity. Ultimately, it doesn't matter, because next life, you're somewhere else, they're somewhere else, there's no relationship. So if you leave it just at that, it's sentiment. It's passion and ignorance. But we are describing that the reason is because the principle of authority must be followed. Why? Because then after the father, you see outside the house, then there's people that the father listened to. He has authorities. Then ultimately we see that there's spiritual authorities. The father and mother have gurus. Then those gurus, then they have gurus. And then the whole concept of the parampara. And then there's Krishna. And we are all therefore servant of Krishna. So Krishna's at one end and coming down through all the acharyas and through the gurus and through my parents, and then there's me. And you see the whole line of the parampara. So this is connecting philosophy with religion, then you get success. And if you take one or the other, you can never have success. Never have success. Right? If we just take the philosophy, then unless we can work purely on the platform of sadhana bhakti, which also has its own culture, we cannot function. We will not be successful. Right? And if we can sit down and chant all day and do deity worship and just go out and preach and we're satisfied, we can do that. But if we have to have a little bit more activity than that, right? Krishna says, if you can't do that, then work for Krishna. If you can't do that, then do something and give the result. So we have to work at any one of those, we start to having to address our nature, which means then there must be a culture how we interface. So when Krishna says, "Work, do your work and give the result to Krishna," that's varnashram. Right? Work for Krishna and do your own work and give the result, that's varnashram. Right? If you just stop at sadhana bhakti, you don't need varnashram. But you have to be fully, 100% satisfied and engaged in sadhana bhakti. That means we don't have to address a conditioned nature. Right? But the problem is the living entity in the material world has to address his conditioned nature. He has a body, he has a mind, you have to deal with it. So now we can either deal with it according to Western concepts or according to our own concepts, or we can according to Krishna's concepts. Krishna says, you have this nature, do these activities. You have a mood of shelter, you have a mood of organization, you know, you're dynamic, you're resourceful, and Krishna says, manage. Do administration. If you have ability, you can study very nicely, you can teach this knowledge to others, you know, completely absorbed in deity worship. You know, like that, Krishna says, do these things. This is a brahminical nature. You know? So, the whole point is that you have some qualities. And if you have those qualities, you want to say something? Then you do something for Krishna, according to how Krishna says. Otherwise, we can speculate. Well, I want, you know, complete independence. I don't want to take any responsibility, but I want control over everything. And then that's what we have today. You know? And that's why no one is satisfied. Right? We're not satisfied because we just want to take these things that I want. And I don't want, I leave the other things. The kids are great, you know, come up, sit on the lap, and you bounce, and you play, and talk with them. But then the rest of the day, you know, forget it, you know. You know, and then you got to go out and work all day and get money for them. You got to educate them, you got to dress them, you got to take care of the medicine. That part I don't like. That's, no. But whenever they're in a good mood and they come and sit on my lap and, you know, we talk and laugh and all that, I'll do that. Then, can you call that a parent? Yes or no?
No.
No. So then, that's the whole thing. Is parent means you get that moment, those few moments in a day, and the rest of the day you got to work really hard. Right? Right? For 1% of that happiness, 99% work. So that's the way it is with everything. But according to your nature, you can do it. A Brahmin can go through all those activities and do puja day in, day out. And I'm telling you, we may say, well, anybody can do puja. I'm telling you. I've been sitting here, we've been running puja here. I have hardly seen any boys that once they're trained in puja, once they become familiar with the puja, which means a few months, that they want to continue doing puja. They just want to know it. Everybody wants to know puja. Everyone wants to say, yes, I can do puja. Everyone wants that funny thread around their neck. But to do puja day in, day out, the rest of their life, let them step forward. One, two, your experience? Same?
Yeah.
Now he's a pujari. Here is a Brahmin. And that's my experience in training. Everybody wants to know. Nobody wants to do. So therefore, Krishna says, work according to your nature. Otherwise, you just pick and choose as you like and make up your own thing, and that's called mental speculation, and everybody can enjoy. We have a whole planet, 5 billion people on the planet, they're all enjoying their speculative cultures. And they're not happy. And from each and every one of those cultures, they're becoming devotees. Why? Because they've tried all those cultures, they're not satisfied, therefore they're becoming devotees. So we should be intelligent. It's okay, we've tried that, now let's try Krishna's culture. But we have to try it as Krishna says, right? One wants to be a grihastha, but doesn't want to follow the grihastha dharma, he's not going to be satisfied. No one else will be satisfied. We want to be a brahmachari, then we have to follow that, right? Oh, I don't want to get married, too much problem, this, that. Then, okay, But then work, be submissive. You know? But no, I want my independence, I want my own room, I want my own this. No, that's grihastha. No, but I don't want to get married, it's too much trouble. Is it? No, you're a lazy bum. You don't want to be a brahmachari, you don't want to be a grihastha, because it's too much trouble. Like that. So therefore, there's trouble. When brahmacharis are brahmacharis, grihasthas are grihasthas, like that, it works very, very nicely. Because it's the Lord's body. Right? The head, the arms, the stomach, the leg, when they all work together, it works nicely. We've all heard of the body of the Lord from the angle of the varnas. I don't know if anybody's heard from the ashrams. Bhagavad mentions it in the Bhagavatam. Means we've already heard shudras are the legs, vaishyas are the stomach, kshatriyas are the arms, brahmins the head. We also mentioned according to the varnas, the ashrams. The brahmacharis are the legs, the grihasthas are the stomach, the varnaprastas are the arms, sannyasis are the head. So from all aspects it works. So everybody has their duty and their place. And according to that, then it works. Does that make some sense? Yes.
Maharaj, now you mentioned about the different alternative Krishna is giving in the Bhagavad Gita. Like if one cannot fix one's mind, then one follows sadhana, and then if you cannot do that. What about once one is taking initiation? We take up a vow, and that means you follow the four regulative principles, you follow sadhana and all this. So it means that those who took that vow, they don't have all the alternatives.
No, each one is going down into the next. It's not that you leave one. See, this is a difficulty. Hey, it's a difficulty just in the material world, but especially is the difficulty kind of in the modern culture. Because modern culture, you need to be able to fit everything in a little box, put a name on it, and put a little arrow pointing one way or the other. You know? So it's one or the other. But the whole point is the first alternative is surrender. If you can't do that, then you follow sadhana. That doesn't mean you give up your attempts to surrender. It means that every moment you're trying, but just to just surrender, it's not happening on the spot. It means the gopis saw Krishna, they surrendered that moment. The wives of the Brahmins saw Krishna, they surrendered that moment and took up full devotional service. We see Krishna, we don't surrender. So, but that's what we want to do, so we keep following those things to do it. So then we take up sadhana. Sadhana bhakti then will help us surrender. Then if we find that, you know, just sitting in the temple and chanting and going out and just doing some preaching and then coming back to the temple and continuing chanting, that's not enough. Then we find difficulty in that, because that will give us perfection. It's complete in itself. It has its complete culture, how you deal with the devotees and all that kind of stuff. Then we have a conditioned nature. Okay, then we do this particular service with Krishna. The sadhana continues, our desire to surrender continues. But now if we see we're doing full-time service for Krishna in this, we're not able to just do that all there. We need, let's say, you know, some facility outside, whatever it is for family or whatever is the need, then we take that one. It doesn't mean we give up serving Krishna. It doesn't mean we give up surrender. Sadhana, it doesn't mean we give up the idea of surrender. But now it just means what you add.
It's a lesser degree then.
It addresses a broader, it addresses more finer aspects of the conditioned nature. In other words, sadhana bhakti addresses that you have a body, and the body has senses. So that means the tongue is engaged in chanting about Krishna and taking prasad. You know, the arms are engaged in kirtan or book distribution or, you know, embracing the devotees, the legs are walking to the temple, walking to dancing, going out on sankirtan, preaching, like that. The nose is in smelling the incense or the flowers offered to the Lord, the eyes and seeing the deity, seeing the devotees, like this. These things are engaged. It's a complete. Now, if you have to engage more than that, identification is more than just we have the body, we have to take care of it. We have a little bit more of an identity. Then the varnashram has to come in at that point. that it will be according to eight natures, four ashrams, four varnas. Then we do that service for Krishna full time. Right? You understand? We can be full time devotee in the temple doing that service for Krishna all day. Like that. You know? Then, but if we find that that still doesn't address fully the nature, there's still a little bit more desires or a little bit more something that has to be addressed, then we go into the next. Then do that activity that you need, but give that result to Krishna. And Krishna Prabhupada says in the purport, best is give all the result, but at least give something. So then that gives more. You understand? It means, yeah. Is that? So the whole thing is devotees, that the important thing at this juncture, because then someone could say, okay, well, if one can just do sadhana or just those activities that are fully, like in the temple, that's better, and if someone's not living in the temple, that's less. Means that the devotees, we're talking about madhyamadhikaris, right? Not talking kanistas. We're talking madhyamadhikaris. Madhyamadhikari, the mood is, I want to get back to Godhead, and I'm going to follow whatever it takes to do it. I have these impurities, these emotional, sensual desires, and by the process of engaging them in Krishna's service, I will dissolve them. They will disappear. I will destroy them. And then all I'll be left with is this pure, sincere desire to please Guru and Krishna. Right? So, I have this desire, let me take care of it. Just like I'm hungry. I could, you know, we could just do kirtan all day, but we're hungry. So we stop. We don't just say falsely, just say, nah, it's maya, and then go on. We won't last. Because we're not on that platform where we can disregard it. Like the Goswamis. They might eat, they might not eat. They might sleep, they forget. It's not that they were sitting there and sleeping an hour and a half a day, and Rupa Goswami was telling Sanatan, you know, hey, if I nod out, wake me up, and, you know, hey, wake me up in 5 seconds, or, you know, stuff like that. They would just be talking about Krishna, and they would forget about sleeping, right? Just like you may have been getting ready to go to bed, you're a little tired, and then you suddenly meet a friend or something you haven't seen for a long time, you just start talking for hours. You were tired, but you forgot about it. So in the same way, they're so enlivened about Krishna that every day they forget about sleeping. And every day they forget about eating. Someone comes and says, oh, some Mahaprasad. Oh, then they'll take it. And then if nobody brings, or, you know, they forget. Right? So it's total absorption. So we don't forget. We have to address this. We have to address the conditioned nature. So Krishna then gives us ways to do that. So we can do it on that platform, just the sadhana, or we can expand that out into the varnashram.
And this does not interfere, for example, like for grihastha who live outside, who have heavy material duty, they have to work, or
no.
And they have to, like, reduce their sadhana, and, like, because yeah. They cannot do as good as in the temple, that's, we know. Does it mean that now he's not following the instruction, or he's disobeying the instruction of the spiritual master? Or
no. It means that what it is that one has to have a goal. See, when one has a goal, that's called a grihastha. If there's no goal, or they're just goals around the family, that's called a grihamedi. Doesn't matter if they're initiated, not initiated, you know, it doesn't matter if, you know, who they are. Then it is that's the point. Do they have a goal? Now, I have these desires and emotional needs. I'm going into the grihastha ashram, and for the desires and needs I have, I'm going to have to live outside the temple, have a job or business or something to generate funds. So that means I'm going to be able to only give a little bit of time for sadhana and other activities. But my goal is to go into that with knowledge. This will come up. This will be probably day after tomorrow's discussion. You know? I will go into this with knowledge that all these things, you know, the family scene, the money, the so-called security, the so-called protection, the so-called happiness and satisfaction and emotional support that I am imagining I will get. But the Bhagavatam says is illusion. It's not there. I will go into this with the understanding that Bhagavatam is correct. I will perform the duties properly. And by doing that, I will see, yes, these are all illusion. The real relationship between me and my wife is not because I'm a man and she's a woman, because it's two devotees who are serving Krishna. And all the other stuff is illusion. Between me and my kid, it's not because, you know, it is a biological expansion of me, but that this is a soul, is Krishna's devotee, and I can help train them in Krishna consciousness. Right? I'm working hard for the house, but it's not that I got work, it's my money, it's my house. That's not the satisfaction. These are Krishna's devotees, my wife, my kids, and so it's an ashram. So I'm maintaining the ashram. So with time, you just see, step by step, that all those other ideas that have been there since time immemorial are illusion. So with knowledge, he goes in. With knowledge, he goes in. And then he comes out the other side because he's destroyed that. He, his wife, his kids have no illusions. And then you move to Vanaprastha. Then as a Vanaprastha, what are you doing now? Now you're helping other grihasthas understand this. You're training others so that what kind of relationship you have with the wife, that expands, means how to work with other devotees. You know? Then how to train others. Now those junior grihasthas and, you know, brahmacharis, brahmacharinis, I train them. Like that. Now I'm able to get more involved in the temple activities. Now I can perform the activities, help support the temple and that instead of just the house. So the principles remain. It means you go in knowing the principles with the understanding that the details are illusion, but it's the details we're attached to. And then we're able to destroy those details and come back to the principle and now apply it in as Vanaprastha. Understand? That's what makes the Varnashram system work. It's not the grihastha did this activity and he, you know, talked to his wife like that and talked to his kids. Those are details of the art of living in that ashram. But the principles are something else. So this is the problem, is if we approach, you know, brahmacharis, grihasthas, or even, you know, business or management or puja from just the duties, religion, without understanding its connection to the philosophy, then we may do it, but it'll be sentiment. Or we may throw it out of sentiment. Niyamagraha means we just follow it because we're supposed to, or we throw it out because we don't understand why. So that's the whole thing, is you have to know what you're doing. That's why Prabhupada says, this will come up, a first-class brahmachari makes a first-class grihastha. A second-class brahmachari will be a second-class grihastha. Third class will be third class. Never. First class is that one who goes into marriage with knowledge. He actually understands marriage is an illusion. But I have these attachments, and I have to go through it to remove it. So that's what I'm saying. This is very much easier for the Madhyams to understand. Because their goal is to get back to Godhead, hook or by crook. Like, I have these material desires, I'll deal with them now. I'll give, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years for it. But when I've finished with that, these are finished. It means unlimited lifetimes of material desires of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, I'm going to destroy in 20 years. I'm going to wipe it out. And then very cleanly, I'm just going to go on with my attachments for Krishna, develop that, and go back to Godhead. Like that. So what's 20 years? Like that. So, depending upon our previous experiences, someone will come already. They've done that. Everybody has to do this. You either did it in the previous life, or you do it in this life. So someone who comes in, they can be a good brahmachari, go their whole life. They've already done this. They've already been first-class grihasthas. Now they can be first-class brahmacharis. Like that. So everyone has to do it. So whether you did it today or yesterday, this is where the Kanista attitude comes in. Oh, we're brahmacharis, so these guys are lesser. You know, or we're grihasthas, we're honest. You know, they just sit in the temple and do nothing. You know? So this is for the Kanistas. Kanistas base it on this, because there's no goal. But if your goal is to get back to Godhead, what does it matter how you do it? If you do it as managing the temple, you do it as distributing books, you do it as doing puja, you do it with your grihastha duties, whatever it is, you do that and get to Krishna. That's what Krishna says. You surrender if you can't, sadhana bhakti is there, then do active service for Krishna, activities, and then do your work. These are ways to get to Him. And then they just fold up one into the other. When you finish grihastha duties, it folds up into the next one. That it folds up to the next. And then, then you go back to Godhead. So that is the approach. With that, then you can actually get something out of varnashram. Because that's not the identity. Today, I'm unmarried. Today, I have no material. I don't have, as such, any particular material desires. I'm willing to do service. You know, I like doing the sadhana. I can live simply. Then, for me, the duties of brahmachari, brahmacharini, this is what I should be doing. Because it fits my mentality today. As I go, I purify more, more desires start coming up. I start to see, hey, there's a whole lot of desires here for all kinds of material facilities and all this and that, you know, in some of my own space. And we talk to others, we read the philosophy, they go away, nice. They don't go away, then they have to be addressed, because this is our mentality now. Then we see, okay, now I have these things, how to get rid of these? Then grihastha ashram is there, you can get rid of them very nicely, and then come right back. So what's there's no problem.
What happens if I don't recognize my conditioning? I want to be like very quickly Krishna conscious.
That's called philosophy without religion. It's called mental speculation.
What happens if somebody tries to go that way?
Well, you can see so many examples. They stay in the temple for some time and at one point burn out and then end up outside, you know, going through a few marriages and, you know, all kinds of insanity. And you can look around, you can see it. Point is because we have this idea that one is better than the other, means you can say, yes, one situation is better than the other. It may be, quicker taking the highway than taking the country road. But if you can't get on, you're closer to the country road, that's the road for you to take. You know? But your idea is to get to the same goal. Someone else may be over there, next to the highway. They just get on the highway, go. So it's better. But the best thing is, what is best for you? It means we make gradations of that. But what is best for you? Understand? So it's a matter of these gradations are made so that there is also some respect, so you naturally move up, right?
But if my environment has so much, put so much expectation on me, social environment, I'm just for the sake of discussion.
No, this is good. It's good.
My environment is putting so much, so many high expectation on me. So how I deal with that?
We try to come up to the standard, but we make a plan. Maybe, okay, this is the standard that's expected. Maybe it'll take me 1 year to get to that. So I make my plans, this and that, and then I get there. It may be unrealistic, expected it'll happen today, but I'll get there. That's the thing. I must plan how to get there. That is the thing. And others who are honest, they will accept that. See, that is the duty of those in leadership positions, to create the environment in which everybody can be situated according to their need. That is the actual purpose of administration. You know, the Brahmins teach, the administrators manage it, so that everybody else can function. Like that. See, generally, we have a tendency, if you know, from our culture, everywhere, the living entity always wants to be on top. We want to be God, so at least we can't be God, then at least we can be, you know, the top of the pile, be Brahmins or Kshatriyas or, you know, whatever it is. We want to be the top of the pile. So, but the point is you have your general populace. Then amongst the general populace, which is all the people, you know, then a few of them know how to do business and create all the economic development. A few of them know how to organize the society, and a few of them know how to teach. And they organize and help everybody else. So it's that you have people, and you must organize them, you must teach them, you must have economic development. So these other three orders are there to create that for it. In other words, it's service to the whole body. Right? The hands aren't hands into themselves. The hands are for protecting and, you know, getting food and feeding the whole body. Like that. The body is to digest everything for the whole body. The legs are to carry the whole body around. The head is to think and see and do everything for the whole body. So it's all a total picture that everybody has their place. We generally have a tendency to separate them. And because of that, then, just everybody will be Brahmins. So, jai, you know, that's great. But then, first of all, everyone has to do the duty of the Brahmins. And the second is then we have to be able to be satisfied like that. Sudama Brahman had nothing, right? He lived in a house. The roof leaked. He had nothing to eat, right? You know, and he was satisfied because that's what Krishna sent him. That's all. Krishna didn't send any more. So when Krishna sends, I'll have more. So if someone can live like that, then fine. If they want more than that, then you have to get it. You know?
Maharaj, my last question is, the mode of goodness is next to, we can approach the Vishuddha Sattva. So then we see like great devotees like Arjuna, who were externally like in the mode of passion, they were at the same time pure devotees, exalted personalities, eternal liberated soul. How does this compatible? How is it possible that these two things can be compatible?
Yes, this is compatible means, you could hear in the back? Yeah? This is compatible because this is Daiva Varnashram. See, the Asuric Varnashram, you might find it incompatible. Asuric Varnashram means non-God-centered. Daiva Varnashram means God-centered. So even though you perform an activity, that the activity itself may be controlled by the mode of passion. But you yourself in your consciousness perform it in the mode of pure goodness. You understand?
That means for Krishna.
Yes. So that's the whole point. That is the meaning of it, that's the meaning of what Prabhupada calls the Pravriti Marg. Means that you take material attachment and facility, but you engage it in Krishna's service. Right? You understand? You have attachment for family and facilities, but you use all those in Krishna's service. Then it becomes purified. So you see everything, your house, your home, family, money, everything, yourself as Krishna's. There's no difference. Is that understood?
Yeah, this nature of like Arjuna get angry and he was fighting in that mode of passion, like you had red eyes.
So Prabhupada says you can't fight unless you're angry.
Yeah.
But the point is what you have to understand, what are they fighting about? They're fighting about that, you know, Duryodhana came over and took his ball or something like that. They're fighting that the country, the people are supposed to be Krishna conscious. So they must be led by kings who are God conscious. This Duryodhana runs a nice material kingdom. Sensually and emotionally, the people are satisfied. But spiritually, zero. So therefore, this is not a proper kingdom. So we should run the kingdom just to introduce this. It doesn't have to be us. It could be anybody. If Duryodhana was doing it, we would happily live in the forest. But because he's not doing it, therefore it must be done. That is the duty of a king, to train the people in God consciousness as well as cultivate their material needs. So therefore, he's a nonsense, so he has to be removed. He's not going by just going up and saying, Duryodhana, you're not doing your duties as a king nicely. You know, why don't you take a hike? You know, or he's not himself going, oh, thank you for telling me. And now he corrects himself. So they already tried speaking nicely. They already tried leaving him in a position. Then, if that doesn't work, then you have to separate him off from the others and then danda. That's just the way it works. You have a bull. Bull is Dharma Raj themselves, you know? Dharma. they're controlled by the body is controlled by goodness. You see, they eat pure things, they sleep very little, they like being very clean, they like clean environments. But when the bull, if you want to control them, you have to use these very like harsh sounds, and you have to use a stick. You can say, my dear bull, you know, kindly don't come into this place here. You know, we're selling, you know, all this Mahabhashad for the devotees and that. And if you come in here and eat everything and break everything, then it won't be very nice. Will that work? No, you have to get out a stick and hold it up like this, and then the bull goes away. So in the same way is, you can say what you want to Duryodhana, he doesn't listen. You can say what you want to Dhritarashtra, everybody said. Even Krishna himself said, he doesn't listen. So therefore the only thing left is stick. So that is his duty. It's not that duties don't carry some downside, like we mentioned in the beginning. Everything has its downside. Right? Every aspect has its side, which you can look at it materially and say, oh, this is not so good. Right? Mm-hmm. Like you say, brahmacharya life. No freedom. They don't have their own stuff, own facility, don't make their own programs. So you can say, you know, that it's not free, you know. It's, I mean, it's like, you know, you're not your own man. You know, it's just, you know, kids. But with that, they have another kind of freedom. They don't have to worry about all so many other things. They just walk in, sit down, eat prasad, walk away, and forget about it until the next time. So half an hour a day they think about prasad. Right? Grihastha has to think all day how he's going to get the money to make sure there's prasad. Brahmacharya doesn't have to think anything. So everything has its good side and its bad side. So in Kshatriyas, one of the bad sides is sometimes they have to fight. Now one thing is at 11:30 now, and it mentions that it was up to this time. So if anybody has another seminar to go to now, you can go. Otherwise, we can discuss for another few minutes if there's question and answer like that. So if anybody, this is their time to hot-foot it to another seminar, this is it. Tomorrow we'll continue with, just say, tomorrow we're going to get into the reflection between the spiritual activities in the spiritual realm, and how that reflects onto the material world on desire, so that you get a mirror image. So therefore you see that what we do here is, the closer we bring what we do here to what they do there, that is the Vedic culture. Right? Just like in the spiritual realm, Krishna wears a dhoti, so therefore the men here wear dhotis. Like the women there wear saris, the women here wear saris. Krishna eats with his right hand, we eat with our right hand. So how this reflection works, how to understand what to take, because the Vedic culture is very vast, what to take, what to leave. If you reflect everything, Krishna is also doing the rasa dance, so do we do that here? So you have to, what is the system for understanding what of the reflection is what we take that we come close? So that will be tomorrow's discussion. Okay, so if there's any other questions, we'll continue for a few more minutes and then we'll have to end. Yes?
I want to ask, you said that to properly live according to one ashram, one has to be mathematical. Do you understand this, right?
One has to be?
One should be.
One should be?
Yeah.
Should be what?
Mathematical.
No. Question was, is I was saying you have to be a Madhyamardhikari to live in the Varnashram system. No, what I'm saying is, if we take it from the viewpoint of the Madhyamardhikari, then they don't see any problem in what situation in life you situate yourself in, as long as your motive is sincere. Whether you're a Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, you know, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, they don't care. It doesn't matter. As long as your goal, your desire is to please Krishna, then they know that it will be successful. Right? The chanting of Hare Krishna, the hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam, the association of devotees, the worship of the deity, the living in the Dham is so powerful that it's going to purify anything that the material world has to offer. So they have no doubt. Right? Because for them, Krishna consciousness, that is reality. Everything else is illusion. You understand? So just because you're a nice person, so what? This life you're nice, next life you won't be. If you're God conscious, that is. That's why Krishna says even someone does nonsense, if they're situated properly, then they're sadhus. Because that little bit of service that they're still doing is better than a whole ocean of material perfection. Right? But what I was saying is why I said it's from that angle, because it's from that angle that it can be easily understood. Kanista means prakrita, means we're still heavily influenced by the material experience. Means we've been in the material world for a long time. So that experience that we get in the material world, that, you know, it's like a nightmare. When you first wake up, you still see the nightmare. So we're still so conditioned by morality and by, you know, all these different things, justice and all these other stuff, that we still have a lot of value in moral, in mundane, you know, piety. Right? Generally, everybody will agree mundane impiety is bad. But the point is we also have to come to the point that mundane piety, just because you didn't lie, it's not nothing special. Right? Like that. Truth means speaking about Krishna. Even you spoke material truth, if it's not about Krishna, it's a lie, because the whole material world is an illusion. So if you speak it about an illusion, it's... You know, like if I say, hey, you know, you see a mirage and go, hey, there's water over there. You know, then... Even though you say, yes, you saw water, a mirage means that it looks like water, but it's not water. So those who are real know that's not water. You can talk about it all day, but until we find an oasis, then you're going to die. Right? You understand? So that is the point. The madhyam means he's come across that. You know, it's easier for him. Like that. But at the same time is, Prabhupada mentions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, is that you have three classes of pure devotees. The Kanista, Madhyam, and Uttam. Pure devotee means their desire is sincere. They want to please Krishna, whatever their position. So if one acts like that, then there'll also be no problems. Like that.
Because I was wondering that... implement
Varnashram, there's many Kanishta adhikaris. No, Varnashram is meant for Kanishta. It's meant for Kanishta, but it has to be controlled by those who have a greater understanding. Right? The purpose that the Brahman is supposed to be respected because he understands these things and understands how to guide. That is why. It's not just because they have some special... You know, when they burp, it smells better or something like that. No. It's that they have an understanding that is beneficial for others. Therefore, that respect is there. Right? That whole natural... There must be... The whole point is we're here, Krishna's there. We have to have some system to getting there. So just like from the child to the mother to the father... Therefore, the mother has to take the position of subservient to the father. Otherwise, for the kid, it's not going to function. The kid will miss out. The kid will not understand parampara. They will never be able to surrender properly to authority, and they will never be able to take shelter of guru fully. If the mother is not, in front of the child at least, always submissive to the husband. Because that's how the kid sees it. And grihastha life means you're going to have kids. Otherwise, don't have kids. Then it doesn't matter what you do. But if you're going to have kids, you have to follow the culture. Otherwise, you screw up the kid. Then having the kid is not for the kid's benefit. It's for your own benefit. Like that. So that's what it says. Don't become a guru, a father, a mother, a teacher, you know, a king, or a presiding demigod, unless you can save the dependent from death. Saving from death means you give him to Krishna. And to get to Krishna means you have to accept guru parampara. So it's part of the package deal. You understand? So the system is, the varnashram is specifically meant for the kanista. But there must be those who have a vision that they can see the total picture and keep everything in place. Like that. So therefore, you say Brahmins are in this position. Because in the social structure, that if the Shudra is not listening to the Vaishya, business does not happen. Right? The businessman tells, okay, you sell this like this. You say this price. And if the Shudra doesn't do that, then is there going to be business? He says, sell it for 10 rupees. He sells it for 5. There's going to be business. You know? Like that. He has to listen. Right? Vaishya have to give that tax to the Kshatriyas. Kshatriyas have to have the power. If the Vaishyas had the power, they'd have the money. Power wouldn't give a paisa to anybody. That's their nature. Therefore, the Kshatriyas have the power. So therefore, the Vaishyas will give the money to them. And then what will they do? Then they'll distribute it. Right? Then they have the power and all that, but unless they listen to the Brahmins, they're busy all day managing the kingdom. You lose sometimes touch with the Shastras and what's the correct thing to do, because you're busy all day with problems. So unless they listen to the Brahmins who are always absorbed in the Shastra, how are they going to know what to do? And the Brahmins don't want the power. They want to study, teach, they got enough to do. So therefore, power is left with the Kshatriyas. But they have to respect the Brahmins. And then the Brahmins, they must be the ones, obviously, the most dedicated to the Lord. Though everybody should be, but they're like very good examples. So naturally, then everyone can just see right through there and see the Lord at the other end. So that is the whole point. See, problem is we see it like this. There's something to eat, there's my tongue. I'm always at the end of the line. There's something to see, there's my eyes. You know, something to touch, there's my hand. So I'm always the end of the line, right? See, this comes from Krishna is supposed to be the end of the line, right? Krishna is the enjoyer. Everyone serves him. So there's Krishna, and then there's all the different devotees, all in the Vatsalya Rasa and the Shakya Rasa and that, and they're all serving, and it's all coming to Krishna, right? So they see themselves, all those devotees see themselves from here. There's Krishna. I serve through my spiritual master and the others, and there's Krishna. They see it through this way, Krishna at the end. And Krishna sees it, I am here, and they're all, and it's all coming this way. That's why Krishna, he doesn't get as much taste as they do. So he wants to come as his devotee to see also through, as Lord Chaitanya. So we're the center like that. So now when we think of Varnashram, we think, wow, I'm a Brahmin, it all, bang, comes to me, I'm the top. Or, hey, I'm a Shudra, he's the top, you know, it all goes to him. You know, it doesn't work. Because we're not seeing it, it's just a line through to Krishna. What do you care if you look through one pane of glass or 5 panes of glass? As long as they're all clean, what do you care? You see what's on the other side. I mean, I know, go to Poland, you got to look through 3 windows. It's so cold. Right? Right? 3 planes of glass. You know, but as long as you keep them clean, you can see what's outside. So the whole point is if we put Krishna there, then it doesn't matter, you know, what we're looking through. You know, it doesn't matter where we situate ourselves, we're still going to see Krishna. Like that. So we see it as a total body, it works very, very nicely. Problem is we put ourselves in the center as Krishna would be in the center. How am I going to get my money? How am I going to get my facility? What's my control? What's my influence? It's all there. That is why we're here in the material world. We don't want to be servant, we want to be master. So that's called false ego. And as soon as we change that ego to I'm servant of Krishna, all the problems just go away. Because it's very easy. You just do like this, you do like that. Wife listens to the husband, husband takes care of the wife. Fine. Easy. Right? No speculation. But as soon as we don't want to accept that, because that's religion, then it's, well, I don't know, Prabhupada said this, maybe, when Prabhupada is here 500 years ago or 5,000 years ago like that, but nowadays different, this, that, you know, husbands and wife, it should be a little different. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work. I mean, if you look realistically speaking, I mean, I know around so many devotees, they've been through 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 husbands and wives. So they tried. They went through their system. They tried the thing. Well, I'll adjust this and that. Didn't work. and I, millions of Indians, they follow that system. They've been married their whole life. No problems. You know, wife is this fat. And the husband is not, wouldn't think for a moment to leave her for a younger girl. And this is big, huge, very rich people. You know, in their businesses, they have tons of young girls and this and that. They don't care. They'd never leave their wife. Because it's just the Dharma, the relationship. They grew up together. They raised their children together. They went through so many hardships together. You know, so many good moments, bad moments. They shared all that. So it's two living entities. It may be on a material platform, but they just, it's viewed from the emotional platform. You know, husband and wife, so much has been done together, so much has been accomplished. They don't look at it from the sensual. But the Western culture is, husband and wife means you look at it from the senses. Who gets what? Who's in control? Who's in charge? Who's this? Who's that? I remember I was talking in one country where we were talking about Grihastha Ashram. Practically every question, well, who's in charge? The husband or wife? You know, it was just from different ways. You know, well, is it a democratic relationship, or is that only in the public eye but this? And I mean, it always comes back to just who's in charge? You know, that's the whole culture there. It's a very, the culture is very strong like that. You know, who's the boss? But couldn't understand just the natural, you know, affectionate relationship that's there. It's just like that. Because they can't see it from just my position and Krishna's there and how it works. Like that. The whole point is when we accept that, the mood of servant, then it works. Right? The husband's business, he has to serve the family. Right? If he takes that mood, it works. He's not thinking, yes, I'm the boss. He may think, I have to make some decision. Someone has to make a decision. And he has to do it. But it's as service to the family. And the other family members, they have their part in the picture, and they do their service. So that way everybody has their aspect, and in the service mood it works. But as soon as everyone's master, then from the joint family, and with the nuclear family, you end up with just a bunch of individuals.
So what I mean was, it's not so easy to come to this platform to always think of yourself to serve.
That's why you have to... question is, it's not so easy to come to that platform of thinking your service. That's why one must read, one must associate with the devotees. You have to pick your association of others who have that idea they want to be servant. Like that. So that's the important thing. But if you go in that line, because to go any other line, it won't work. You know, it just doesn't work. Right? Two masters can live together as long as each master is getting something out of it. But as soon as the master doesn't get what they want, then because they're masters, they can split. But if you have two servants working together, then they need each other. Then it functions. You understand? Just they have different services. Right? You understand? They have different platforms. Like the driver of a car and the mechanic. Mechanic has no meaning unless someone's going to drive the car. The driver has no meaning unless someone maintains the car. So if they both have that, then it works together very nicely.
I understand. Could one say that it is better to stay brahmachari until one learns this, to be the servant?
That we can discuss when we come to that. Question was, is it then better to remain a brahmachari until one understands this point? Like that. The Vedic culture, that was the standard. But the standard was also to train the brahmacharis to understand this. It wasn't by chance they learned it. So you have to understand what is the brahmachari ashram, what are the duties, how to go back to Godhead, and whether you can do it as a brahmachari. And if you can't, then how to do it as a grihastha. That the Vedic culture was specifically how to train you in that. So then you were either first-class Naistika Brahmachari or you were first-class Upakurvana who becomes married. In either case, it's first-class. And then one goes back to Godhead. So that was the Vedic culture. I'm just thinking we should end. Okay, last question and we'll stop. Yes.
Wait. we also find that, for example, the different Mahajans, Narad Muni, he was Brahmachari, Prahlad Maharaj, he was Grihastha, and like that, Grihastha, Brahmachari, Sannyas, that actually doesn't matter to go, in order to go back to Godhead for some people, doesn't matter if they are Brahmachari, Grihastha, and would you like to explain that?
The question is that we see in the Mahajans, so many of them, it didn't, they were in many, many different ashrams and varnas. We see that the Narad Muni is like a Brahmachari, Prahlad Maharaj, he was a Grihastha. Like that, so many examples are there. So it doesn't appear that there's any problem in going back to Godhead. That's the basic principle. Is see what point is we go back to Godhead because we serve the Lord. Right? So therefore, Varnashram means you understand your position and engage whatever your position is in the Lord's service. That's the actual purpose. So the individual should understand the system, and those who are in a position of an authority should understand, and then they can help one understand or help create facilities for that. But in that, one also has to be realistic, because we have to understand that Krishna, you know, is very realistic. He wants surrender, like that. He wants affection. So real service to Krishna means we're doing it with affection. Means that we're doing it externally, that has effect, because it is service for him. But he mentions to Nanda Maharaj is that you get benefit, more benefit, according to how much you understand, how much you know. Like that. So therefore, as we may be performing, but if we don't have any understanding, then it's not very good. And if understanding's not coming, means something's wrong. We're not performing in the right attitude. Because if you have some knowledge, you perform service, you'll get realization. That's mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's just how it functions. When samvit means knowledge, with knowledge, samvit, you perform devotional activity, hladini. Then sandini reveals the understanding of the knowledge. So it'll function. So one has no knowledge, and that's not, that means something's wrong. So therefore, it doesn't matter what your position is, as long as you know how to use it for Krishna, then it's fine. But if you're an illusion, you think, well, I need a, you know, 4-bedroom apartment and 2 cars and this and that, and, you know, I need $100,000, you know, a year, but do no work, and, you know, like that, then one is an illusion. And because the mood is not necessarily to please Krishna, therefore material nature takes over. Because her business is also to see that Krishna is not disturbed. So then what happens is then Maya puts you in illusion, because you have to work. Material world means you have to work. So you either willingly work for Krishna, or you'll be made to willingly work for Maya. So if all you want is to be the big, big man with big, big facilities and not do a whole heck of a lot, Maya's going to make you work. That's all. So that's why sometimes we see things end up so roughly. We can blame the individual, but ultimately we have to look at ourselves. If someone's dealing so roughly with us, what did we do to deserve that? That's the mood Dharma. When Parikshit Maharaj came to him and said, all right, who's beating you? He says, what do you mean, who's beating me? He says, my own activities before have arranged that I'm beaten. Maybe this Kali Raj is the instrument. But, you know, he just has a bad nature, and I have a bad nature, and the modes of nature put us together. But the reason I'm being beaten is because I'm bad. So I can't blame him, right? Because if I wasn't bad, he wouldn't be beating me. He'd be off be beating someone else. Right? So much place on the planet, why is it he and me happen to be together at the same time? Because I deserve it. So ultimately we have to look from that angle. Is that if we've had some difficult, or we've heard of someone who's had a difficult, ultimately it's because there's some problem in the process of surrender. And we're not learning through subtle means, so then Krishna has to resort to more severe means. Like that. So it doesn't matter the situation. Right?
We find also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he didn't accept too much in words the Varnashram Dharma.
Yeah, this is a very good point. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya then you know, Varnashram was meant as mentioned by Ramananda Roy as one of the first points of goal, purpose of human life, goal of human life. He mentioned follow Varnashram. Lord Chaitanya rejected it. But we see that Lord Chaitanya perfectly followed sannyas dharma. And we see that all of his devotees perfectly followed the dharmas according to their situation. We even see that Sanatana Goswami, Haridas Thakur, even though they were the topmost devotees, still followed the culture of someone who was, you know, a converted Muslim. Right? In the society then. They felt, you know, amongst the kind of more smarta Brahmins that were there, they would look down upon him. So they just played that part. They didn't say, hey, listen, I'm Lord Brahma, you know, who are you? You're just a Brahmin. You know, I'm this original Brahmin. Did he say that? No, he just would live away, wouldn't even go in the temple. Just look at the chakras. So then the Lord would come out of the temple and come to him. So they followed Varnashram to the T, but they followed it for the purpose of pleasing the Lord. They saw all their duties in relationship to the Lord. So Varnashram on its own, Lord Chaitanya rejects. But as a medium to get to those higher levels, because Krishna says, yes, first surrender. So what did they talk about in the end? They talked about the surrender of the gopis. So you can do that. Do it today. Do it this second. Fine. That's best. But if you can't, then the end of the line is you got to at least accept the Varnashram. He rejected it as in itself complete that it will take you back to Godhead. And that it itself is the topmost conversation. No. According to your position, you work, you maintain yourself. But when the day's work is over, then you're going to be sitting with the devotees and hearing Bhagavatam, discussing, doing kirtan, taking prasad. That's the real life. The other thing is you have to maintain the body, you have to maintain the family, you got to work. Like that. But, you know, that's what Prabhupada says. Our movement is chanting, dancing, taking prasad. That's what we do. Other things we do are just so that we can maintain the body and we can expand the mission. But the real activities are that. I think we should probably end here. We can...
Last one.
Well, it's already 12.
This morning was announced that you will be giving also on
social supposed to be there. Supposed to be. But he said one or two times. He called me yesterday. Like that. So I may go over there now. Let's see what's happening here. I mean, I'll go one of these days specifically, but when, whether it's today, I'm not sure. I'll find out in 5 minutes. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna.
Wow.
Thank you very much.
They're from. You were there, no? You were always sitting over here, no? When I was sitting in the temple. Not here. I said in the temple in Almaty. Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
Has there any books on this issue will be written on?
Maybe we get it together. We're trying. Basically, all we're doing now is talking and recording it. And then maybe from that we'll try to put it together.
Just to listen all these tapes and then to take some.
Yeah, because the thing is every time I speak on it, it comes out differently. It's presented a different way. Like what I'll talk about tomorrow is normally what I talk about the first day. You know, and different aspects that come out. And, you know.
So there's nothing written down yet about my.
No, I just have tapes. Because I'm good at talking, not writing.
You know. For example, to have more complete pictures, it's better to buy, for example, seminars that you delivered
Bay.
In December, and then also this seminar. And then today.
Yeah, there was also a nice one. We did, got into a lot of detail in Hungary, on Grihasthashram, like that. It was just that. We did one here also, but there was a lot of points that came out here. There were different, but there were a lot of points that came out there. You know, because they ask a lot of questions. That's the thing. Much of this depends upon what the audience asks. Because otherwise, you know, I can go on talking, but what's the use unless somebody understands it? Because generally it's in the questions that it becomes more interesting for devotees.
Yeah.
So it's like the what I talk about is something to establish a platform on which to ask questions. You know, to create that. Makes sense.
Who?
Oh, I see. Yeah. Best thing is you speak, there's one devotee named Sadbuj. Yeah, he sits in room 203 in the long building. 203. And he's the superintendent of the schools. So then he will be the one to speak to. You know, because he's over all the schools here, because we have four schools here. You know, so best thing is speak to him. Generally, all our, you know, those who come in through him. Yeah, you speak to him first, and he can tell you what are all the schools and what would be the best situation.
I have a question.
Where are you from?
From Colombia.
Oh, okay.
We can see that there are some material duties and some spiritual duties. Are there, like, in the...
They're both connected. They're all
they
connected.
Are connected?
Yeah, they're all connected.
But we can see, for example, that Sanatana Goswami and they were gopis, right?
Yeah.
But in the material world, they are doing other things. Like
yeah, because it means that's another thing. You could ask that tomorrow. We can get into that.
Okay.
It's a good topic. But it explains Lord Chaitanya and explains all his devotees and the moods and all that. You can remember it, that point. That there's gopis right there, but they do something else here. Like that.
Okay.
That's a nice discussion.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Comes out, she already went to the Sadbuj Prabhu and he told her so that you look at to this.
Oh,
boy,
I see.
He is ready to give some letters.
I see.
But you also have to look.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Right. It's two boys.
Two boys. Oh, I see. So maybe you can arrange a time with them, you, Gordon Ryan, and all that can look and talk with them. Oh, how long was he here for? Well, he'll be here through Gaur Purnima. And how long are you here for? How long are they here? Oh, I see. Mm. I mean, you can't just get, you know, 15 minutes sometime. Or... Yeah. No, I'm just talking about just the talk.
Yeah.
Like that, and then tell them what the whole scene is.
Maybe tomorrow when you tell them when they should come.
Okay, maybe if they come tomorrow. It means come at this time for the class, and then after the class, and then he can tell what is the time they can that they can discuss. Okay? One second. Hmm? Is your boy? Oh. You're from where? Croatia. Oh, okay.
A little speak English. I have one question. In this Gurukula, little baby, but...
Little baby? No, here, no little baby.
Is this...
No, little babies is that side.
Little means... 10, 15.
But that's not little baby. Baby means this big. You're going like this. That's little baby.
Now I'm 23.
Yeah, you know little baby.
Yes. But how can I learn knowledge, Vedic knowledge in Gurukula? Is it not possible for me?
Maybe. You ask him. You can tell him about Naru or tell him about, you know, someone else.
Thanks.
You just have been in power.
Very good.
And Shukadev Goswami was a parrot in the spiritual world.
Yeah. They all come.
Okay.
The point is they all come here to take part in the Lord's desire. Okay? The Lord's desire is that everybody go back to Godhead. So that's the meaning of the Sankirtan mission. Yeah. Therefore, it's just how to engage everybody in somehow another Krishna service to get them back to Godhead. Like that. So you do. Whose bag is that over there? The one on the Sringade's face. Whose is that? Oh, yeah, yeah. So watch out for the Sringade. They made it here. It was originally made for the Samadhi, but there was the size was wrong or something, so they gave it here. There's another one there, you see. Yeah, yeah. In the ground floor, there's all like this, all around, but they're all painted.
Looks better like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Maharaj, are you going to speak about, for example, we have varnas and ashrams, and for each varna there's different duties, and also for combination of varnas and ashrams,
we'll get to it. We'll get to that. We'll get to that. We can start day after tomorrow. Tomorrow will be the reflection. Then that'll leave us, I think, 4 days. We can discuss about the application of varna and ashram. You know?
And also how to apply and how to like make it real in the sense of
it becomes real when you understand how it works. You know, like you say, someone who's very expert in a certain thing is they can do something real because they understand the total picture, how it functions. They're the masters. So the Vedic culture works when we understand its purposes, how it functions, and stuff like that. Then the duty is pretty easy. It's like, you know, if you're supposed to do an artik, you do an artik. There's a little bit to learn how to put the tray together and how to wave it, you know. But the whole thing is to figure out how you're the one that's supposed to be doing that. That's the thing. It means the performing the duties of varnashram are not so difficult. I mean, it takes the endeavor, it takes the time, it takes the dedication. But the difficulty is understanding how it functions. That's the main difficulty.
Yeah. In the classical varnashram, the woman used to take the varna and the ashram of her husband. Now that the things are kind of weird in this society.
Kind of is a euphemism.
How that will work?
Did you take the ashram?
Hmm?
Did you take the ashram of the husband? I don't think so.
Ashram, no.
Gotra, yes. But ashram, no.
Of course ashram. He's a grihastha, she becomes a grihastha.
Oh, sorry, I think of varna.
Varna.
Because that's how you get suttas and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, the gotra, but not necessarily the ashram. Not necessarily the varna.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
You may have a kshatriya, he's married and the queen has so many maidservants. Those maidservants are shudras. So if he has a child from one of those shudras, they're called shudranis. So they're given all royal privileges, but they can never sit on the throne.
Like Vidura.
Like Vidura. Vidura was such an example.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he was the most qualified, but he couldn't sit because he's a shudra, he's the son of a shudrani. like so that. No. You understand? So they don't necessarily take on the varna, but they help in any case. The wife always assists the husband, but it may be as if he's a kshatriya, it may be as the queen, maybe as a, you know, second or third queen, maybe as in another position. But they help from whatever is their platform.
The varnashram that Srila Prabhupada taught to us is like, according to your qualities, you get that.
Means the first varna. Thing that has to be important is that you have the platform of surrender to Krishna, sadhana, working for Krishna, and then whatever is varnashram duties. You understand? So everybody's going to have that sadhana. It's just how far you have to come to address. You know? So if you don't have to address much, one can live easily like a Brahman. Because a Vaishnava is automatically a Brahman. But if the conditioned nature is a little bit heavier, then they may still follow the Brahminical culture, but they may have to live in another capacity, and they may do business. So they still follow the culture of Brahmins. They still have the goals and everything of Brahmins, because that's the Vaishnava goal. But they may have to do their business. And then, because they do business, and there's some duties there. You do business, but then you have to give money and charity also. Mm-hmm. So that comes along with it.
But also we find that, for example, Karna, he was one of the better warriors, but he wasn't considered as a kshatriya.
Yeah, because he was seen as the son of a charioteer.
Uh-huh. So
just because you can fight doesn't make you a kshatriya. Kshatriya is one who gives protection, you know? And then to back that up, he knows the whole administrative and military science, like that, so he can work on that level, you know? That makes a kshatriya. Just like a parent, you make it, someone's a parent by they take care of the children. The parent doesn't take care of the children, you will not call them a parent. You may say, yes, biologically they're a parent, but as far as rasa goes, they're not a parent. So just because someone can fight or someone can manage doesn't make him a kshatriya. Like that. Kshatriya is one who can give protection, who can shelter. So when you put that all together, then you get a kshatriya. Otherwise, the mother is also sheltering and protecting the child. Does that make her a kshatriya? No, it makes her a mother.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very
much. What is this?
The measurements for that mosque.
Oh, I thought you were going to say this is for Balabhadra's danda. Yes, it must be 12 foot 10 high and 11 foot 6 wide. And I was going to say, yes, sir, and the prash. You want the wheels on the bottom or you want the wheels on the side?
We think a caterpillar treads.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, because then it can like pivot in one place when he wants the prash to turn.
And it goes with his gait as well, you know?
Yeah, it can just...
No, Sadhguru said he'll pay for it. It's no problem. It's
so he couldn't get it together. Subhekshana. Find Preeti. Hare Krishna. Let's see if it's a full house tomorrow. It was pretty full today.
I counted it was 103 people.
103? Really?
Not including it.
No. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's nice.
80?
It means that I can just imagine what Hare Keshmar's is going to be.
Oh, it's bad.
You know? I think last couple of years been like 500-600. Yeah. You know? It used to be like 100... 200, then it was big, it was up to 300. Yeah, that's true. But it was good. Jai Ho! Wow, we haven't seen you for a while. Come, sit.
You're in the middle of a discussion.
No.
Sorry. Oh, hey, now how can we engineer this? Now, Balabhadra is coming.
After tomorrow.